Hey, apparently that's my cue. When the music stops, I get to dance. Hi, everybody. I'm Michelle. I am ready. she says. You can find me on Twitter on Emmy Dickinson, and I'm a nanotechnologist, and hopefully you're all here today to learn a little bit about nanotechnology and gadgets and gizmos, and here's how I work. There's going to be a lot of running. I'm going to be running, because this is interactive, so you should, most of you should have something. Do you have something to hold? If you have something to hold that I've given you, please hold it up. Yes. People's sticks. People with sticks. Can you please blow up your balloons at some point in the next 10 minutes and tie them? Who's got a temporary tattoo? Yes. And those I gave water to, cups of water. Love this, man. Okay, so we're going to learn a little bit about nanotechnology, what it is, why it is, and why it's going to be a superpower for our current and our future gadgets. If you have any questions along the way, harass me. Look, this is about you, not me, right? I do this. I have a lab. It's cool. I'm not here to educate myself. I'm here to answer your questions, give you some information, but I want this to be super interactive. Because the problem with theaters is that I go, bleh, and you guys sit. And what I want is you guys to go, bleh, and me go, yay. So if we can have questions along the way, if you have something specific on nanotech, let me know, because I'd rather answer that than talk about things that aren't relevant. Cool? Happy? Nice. Right, I guess we should get started. So why am I even talking about this? I'm talking about this because I'm a nanotechnologist. I built a lab here in New Zealand, and I break tiny things. Basically, I make nanotechnology, and I break nanotechnology, and that's really important, and I'm going to tell you why in a little second. And there's a heap of nanotech happening right now without you even knowing it. There's a bunch in your electronic devices, and there's about to be a whole lot more that's probably going to change the way we do things. And you may or may not know, and you may or may not want to know, but I think it's really important that everybody asks some intellectual or dumb, I don't care, questions. Because I think it's all about learning about what we're doing and why we're doing it. Nothing. So who am I and why am I here? Look, I'm a, depending on who you talk to, I'm a master of lots of things. If you ask Paul Henry, well, let's not do that. those of you from New Zealand know what the story behind that. No, I did not sleep with Richard Branson. Why do people keep asking me? So I do a lot of TV work. I do TV work for many reasons, but the most important one is not because I want to be famous, because I hate that, but because I believe that we don't have enough tech on TV. We don't have enough science on TV, we don't have enough tech on TV, and I don't want to build a house again against my neighbors, and I don't want to cook anymore. Do you know that we watch more cooking shows than we actually spend time cooking? Oh, right, it's fun, and I get it, and reality TV is really cheap to make, but I want our young girls to be inspired by other people than Kim Kardashian. I want them to be inspired and have role models of women and high-powered women who are doing smart shit. Right? Because that's really important. And we just don't seem to fill our media space with that. We fill it with glossy magazines of, hey, how to get skinny. And we fill it with things like, hey, look, Kim Kardashian's got a new perfume. We don't fill it with things like, hey, girls, how to get smart. And that's what I want to do. So I'm on some shows that I may not agree with the morals of because it's the only space that media gives me right now. And so I do a lot of TV, and that is my reason behind it. And hopefully one day I have a space that's prime time and we can educate everybody in and I don't have to have little slots on other shows. But for now, you'll see me on Breakfast News, Paul Henry. I'll be on Third Degree next week doing 3D printing. I run a lab. This is my lab. It's named after me. It's kind of cool. And I ran a lab and I decided to move to New Zealand to set up this lab because I felt like New Zealand has a really awesome tech space and there's a bunch of little pockets of nanotech happening. And I just thought, well, I have a whole bunch of experience from my previous time as a consultant in nanotech. I used to consult for Apple and IBM and Intel and those guys. But I just thought, well, let's bring that here, because it's pretty cool here, and I reckon we can do a lot with high-tech industry here. And you know what's nice? Is I can just go harass people personally. When they're in the U.S., you have to fly places. Here, I just go knock on your door, and I stalk you, and then you work with me, and it's cool. So I run a lab, and it's pretty busy. So I'm based up at the University of Auckland here. And I have a whole bunch of students and people and kids who give up their time to come learn in the lab. Because I just want to provide a space in New Zealand where people can have hands-on with the technology that you really can't get hands-on with. I want to teach people about it, and I open my lab to any student who wants to. Some I can pay, but there's a lot who I can't because there's a lot who come through. It's all about giving our kids training so that they can actually go on and be the future. I blog. I rent. No, I blog too. I blog about all sorts of things nanotech. You'll find me on SciBlogs, which is New Zealand's national science blog channel. I blog as NanoGirl, and I blog all about nanotech and why it's important and what we should worry about and cool things. So if you want to listen to my rants, then find me there. I'm a bit of a greenie, so I do write. I mostly write for people like Green Ideas magazines about science and sustainability and why we should care and what decisions should you make in your life. I don't judge you. You can make whatever decision you want, but make it an informative one, and I'll do all the maths for you, so you don't have to worry about it. And I do some talks. I've done a couple of TEDx and blah, 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 and here you are today. This is one. So that's who I am, and I'm a lot of different things to lots of different people. If you are a child, I'm Nano Girl. I come to your school, and we do science. But today, you're all grown up, so I didn't wear my cape. I hope that's okay. So that's a little bit of who I am and why I'm here. And look, I've always wanted to be a superhero. I still do. I gave myself an alter ego with a superhero name because of that. I think it's really important that we all have ambition and we all have superpowers and everybody has their own thing. Slowly I'm learning that if I had one superpower I had to describe, it would be breaking stuff. That's my thing. It's not very useful if you want to fix stuff, but it's great if you want to know how things break. And I've always had this vision of following your dreams, and I've always wanted to just be a superhero. And working in nanotech has allowed me to develop some things that people would say were superpowers, and we'll talk about those. But let's start at the beginning, because here I'm like, yeah, nanotech, da-da-da-da-da, and people are like, I don't even know what the word means. So can we just go back a step? So I'll start with nanotech means really, really tiny. And then if your eyes don't roll in the back of your head, I'll go one step further. Sometimes I lose people at that, and I'm like, it's just really, really tiny. 10^-9 meters. I'm an engineer by training. This is how we talk. So it's not how normal people talk, but 10^-9 meter is 1 nanometer. That's how tiny it is. But that's like people telling me the distance from here to the moon. Once you get past 100K, it's far, right? Once you get to the power of minus one, it's small. I don't know what that means. So here we go. Look at all these zeros. Because that explains it. No, it doesn't. But that's where you know. That's what 10^-9 meter means. Lots of zeros in front. Nanotechnology is anything that is between 1 and 100 nanometers in one dimension. That's what we say is a nanomaterial. And there are natural ones. You have a bunch in your body. There's stuff all in the environment now. And we make one. So I make a whole bunch of tech. So what does that mean? All right, here's your first experiment. If you have hair, please pluck one out. If you don't have hair, I'm sorry, please find a person next to you who might want to volunteer their hair. This is where you get to know each other. Okay, so I want you to pull one out. I do this too much, I'm going to go bald. So hold it in front of you. Can you see it? Nod if you can see it with your eyes. If you can't, you need glasses. Go get tested. Right? You can see it. That is not a nanometer. What you are looking at, the width of your hair is, depending on what race you are, anywhere from 80,000 to 100,000 nanometers wide. So my lab deals with things that are 80,000 times smaller than the width of the hair that you're holding in your hand right now. That's how small it is. That's cool, right? Because you can't see it, and so I can tell you stuff, and you have to believe me. Why do I care? Why have I given up my whole entire life to this? And I have. And it's awesome. But it has to be fascinating to do that. And you may have noticed I'm slightly passionate about nano, right? Passionate, love it, think more people should ask big questions about it. And I'm passionate about it because I really think it changes the way that we see the world. So first of all, they're incredibly strong. Carbon nanotubes, right? They're in everything. They're incredibly strong. There was this whole multi-billion project that we were going to build the space elevator, right? You heard of this? And the space elevator was going to be made of carbon nanotubes. And that's awesome because they're super strong. Apart from, nanotubes are like this big, not even. I think we can make the longest set of nanotubes like a millimeter. It's a long way to space. You need a lot of those. And to do that, you have to glue them together. Well, that's cool, apart from we don't have a glue that is as strong as a nanotube. So no matter how long you make it, it's going to break at the weakest point. So we have a huge issue with our space elevator right now that we have a material strong enough to do this in theory, but we have no glue strong enough to hold the whole thing together. But for small things, it's actually really, really strong. They're see-through. Do you know what that means? That means I can hide stuff everywhere and you don't know it's there. And that can be good and that can be bad. but it means I can coat things with nanotechnology and you don't see them. If you don't have a smartphone, I'm pretty sure everybody in here has a smartphone. You have a supercomputer in your pocket. There's a reason for that. And that's because electronics got much, much smaller. And there's a reason for that. And that's because we have nanotechnology, so we can make small things. So you all are carrying nanotech in your pocket right now. And that's why you can have the processor speeds that you do, and it can fit in your pocket, and you can take it around, and you can shake it, and whatever you do with your phone, and it's fine. Who has a marble? You have a marble. Can you stand up for me, please? And marble. Can the marble people please stand up? Okay, you can stay there. So you have in your hand a glass marble, yes? How does it feel? Is it hard or is it soft? Hard. Good answer. Right. So marble is made out of glass. If you drop the marble on the carpet, please do that. Nothing happened, right? Didn't bounce, didn't do anything exciting. If you were to do that on something hard like a piece of glass or a piece of concrete, there's a chance that it would smash. Would you agree? Glass smashes when you drop it from stuff. Round glass balls like that drop it. So one day I was in my secret lab, and I was playing with some nanoballs. I make nanoballs out of glass, silica. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to watch it smash. And I set up this high-resolution camera inside a scanning electron microscope, and I'm like, ready for the smash, and I drop it. Can you guys drop the second ball that you have, please? Oh, man, that didn't work at all. Those were elastic bouncy balls, which if we had the best one here. Can you chuck me the elastic one? Thank you. Ah, thanks. Thank you, volunteers. You can take your marbles home if you want. This is a rubber bouncy ball, okay? And you know that when you have a rubber bouncy ball, it bounces. If I did that with a marble, it wouldn't do that. You know how things behave. You live in this world. We understand it. So I dropped this tiny piece of nanoglass ready for the big smash, and it did that. It bounced like a bouncy ball. So I assumed I was wrong, right? I was like, darn it, gotta set this up again. Make a new piece of nanoglass, da 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 da. Did that, set it up. And like when I say set it up, it takes a day, right, to set this up. Set up. Boing, boing, boing. I'm like, darn it, because I figured it's me. I figured maybe I made the ball wrong. So I got some more pure materials, and I made another nanobouncy ball. Boing, boing. I've wasted a month bouncing glass, okay? This is frustrating. And I'll always assume I'm wrong, right? Because I know that glass shatters. What is it? Maybe the plate isn't hard enough. I'll change the plate inside the scanning electron microscope. Boing, boing. And then I thought about it. The thing with nanomaterials is they behave differently. And that's why they're cool. But also, you have no idea what's going to go on. So actually, nanoglass does bounce. It's highly elastic. The reason why glass breaks is because it has tiny defects in it. And defects are where cracks form. And so things are weaker than their theoretical strength because they break at the defects. You know that, because if anybody has tiled their bathroom recently, which I have, what do you do to break the tile? You score it. Why do you score it? Because you want to put a defect in there. Why do you do that? Because you know when you put a defect in there, it'll always break at the defect. If you've ever cut a piece of glass or a piece of tile, you are doing what we know with glass. It's brittle. You put a defect in there, it'll break there. Nanoglass is so perfect, it has no defects. Glass doesn't shatter when it's perfect. It bounces like a bouncy ball. And then I realized I was onto something. Because now I can make claims that even if people didn't believe me, I could say were true because they were nanotech. So they behave really differently, and that means that now we have a whole suite of materials that we have no idea what they're going to do, which is fun. Unless you have an assumption that you're going to put something in there and it's going to react the way, and it doesn't. So we had a lot of problem with our early startup techs when we put technology in a phone. We put a piece of steel in there or a piece of copper and assume it to be conductive, and it's not. And we assume it's going to be a certain color. Gold, by the way, gold at the nanoscale is red. That's really bad. If you're trying to make something gold, right? If you want to be red, that's cool. They knew this in the olden days, because if you ever go to a cathedral and you take a look at stained glass, the reason why the red glass is red is because they used nano gold to make it red. They didn't know at the time, but the way that they got the red pigment into stained glass windows was using gold and literally having a heating process that turned it into gold nanoparticles. Red stained glass in all cathedrals is red gold nanoparticles. So now you have to have a think about how things are going to behave when you get down to this scale. And that's why it's fascinating, because literally every day I find something new. And this is what I do. I make stuff. I make nanoparticles. I make nanoballs. I make all sorts of things. I like the nanoscale because things have a massive surface area. And that's what I want. I want things to be highly reactive, highly conductive, highly lots of things. I like having an area that is big compared to the volume. And I can make tubes. I can make squares. I can make balls. And I can make flowers for no other reason than I'm a girl. So this is probably the most common question I get. Nanobots, right? Will they really take over your brain? And I'm like, why would you ever think that? And then I'm like, well, okay. I guess the Borg Queen may have started it. So the Borg Queen assimilated people using her nanoprobes, right? And everybody is assimilated because nanotechnology. All right, maybe that's a slightly negative connotation on nanobots and nanotechnology. All right, so that's one example. Surely. Just so you know, my fascination with nanotechnology is so bad. This is a side note. This is my dog. And Dalmatians are born completely white. And then they grow their spots at about 1 or 2 weeks of age. And my dog is called Noodle. And he's called Noodle because the first spots that came out were these spots here over his eyebrow. Now, any of you who know anything about the Borg, he had an optical node as his first set of spots. This was the dog for me. So I call him Noodle because it's short for Captain Nice Noodle, which is an anagram of canine optical node. True story. This is my dog. He's much bigger now. Obviously, I can't just put him on my desk anymore. iRobot. Great movie. Will Smith battling the robots, and they got artificial intelligence, and then they start killing people. How do they kill the robots? Nanobots. Again, nanotechnology getting a bad rap. It's not that bad. We don't have robots like this that are taking over the world, so don't stress about it. But in our media, a lot of nanotechnology is given a bad name because we live in a sci-fi world, and there's a lot of, like, people don't understand it, so people tend to be scared of it. How many of you read this book? Yes, I like you all. If you haven't read this book, you should read this book. This is a book called Prey by Michael Crichton, and it's all about nanobots taking over your brain. For those of you who are like, Michelle, when you were a kid, like, how did you go from being a normal child to being a nanotechnologist talking about robots taking over people's brains? This book. I was a late teenager, and I was doing a degree in fracture mechanics, which is breaking stuff, in engineering, like a normal girl. Like the only girl. And studying away, I was like, right, what do I want to do with my life? And I was sort of like, well, I like breaking stuff. I could just keep breaking stuff. And there was a job at Boeing where I could break airplane wings. I'm like, that's pretty cool. I like that. I could do that. And then I read this book. And I'm like, nah, I want to build nanobots. I want to build nanobots that have the potential to take over people's brains. That is it. And people were like, it's a science fiction book. And I'm like, I reckon we can do it. I reckon that'd be way more fun. I want to read people's minds, and that's going to be my superpower. Telepathy. And people are like, you're a little bit weird. So I went into Netscape. This was before Google. And I Netscaped nanotech. One thing came up. And there was a dude in America, and he was working as a professor at a university. And he had a nanotech lab, but he didn't really know what it was or what it did. But I called him. It's like, hey. Read this book. It's called Prey. It's about nanobots taking over people's brains. He's like, yeah, yeah. I'm like, do you do that? Not really. Do you do nanotech? Yep. Do you want a student? Are you mentally stable? Kind of. Sure. So there we go. I packed my bags and I went to embark on a PhD in nanotech. And that is a serious story. That is how I'm here. I read this book, and I was like, yes, we need to do that. And luckily, my professor turned me around from doing it for evil to doing it for good. And I haven't taken over people's brains yet. But that is how I got here. You know how sometimes people are like, how did you always want to? No, I read a crazy book, and I became a crazy lady, and here I am talking to you guys. So should we be scared of and avoid it. And this is a really common question I get. People are like, is it really bad? Is it going to kill me? Should I? I'm not going to tell you what you should and shouldn't touch, but I'm going to ask you a question. How many of you have touched nanotechnology today? How many of you haven't touched nanotechnology today? How many of you don't know? Cool, right? 50% of you don't know. Does that worry you? Maybe, maybe not. How many of you have done this today? How many of you have shaved? I don't care what part of your body it was. Please don't tell me that. How many of you put on sunscreen or a moisturizer? Because pretty much all moisturizer you have now has sunscreen in it. Right? Most of you. If you've done that today, you've probably touched nanotech. On the top of your razor blades, you may think your razor blades are made out of steel. They are. On top of them is 4 nanometers of DLC. DLC stands for diamond-like carbon. You can't see it because it's invisible, because your eye can't resolve something that small. Diamond-like carbon is like diamond. It's really hard and it's really sharp, and it's what gives you your closest shave. We could put more than 4 nanometers on there, but then you wouldn't have to buy your razor every week. Marketing. I just do the science. Don't blame me for that. If you put sunscreen on your face, remember back in the old days, there's a couple of young people here, but back in the old days when you had sunscreen and it was white and you put it on your face and it was white and you're like, got sunscreen on my face. And then somewhere along the line, magic happened. And now you put sunscreen on your face and it just blends in. It didn't just blend in, you just can't see the nanoparticles. Titanium dioxide and zinc oxide are what we use in sunscreen. And all we did was change the size. They went from micro size that your eye can see and resolve because light bounces off it and you can pick that up, to nano size that your eye can't see. It's the same stuff on your face. You just don't have the resolution with your eyes to see it. If you've put a moisturizer on your face or any sort of sunscreen, unless it's the big zinc stick, you've put nanotech on your face. Is anybody worried? No, right? Because you do this every day. It's not killed you yet, hopefully. So you're all good. I have a lot of people approach me saying, oh, is sunscreen dangerous? Yes, being in the sun's more dangerous, though. Like, let's weigh this up. There's a lot of stories saying nanoparticles going under your skin. It doesn't. And if it does, if you have an open wound and you just like to put sunscreen in there for whatever reason, you have these things called lysosomes. They're cells that eat stuff that shouldn't be there. And so we have a whole bunch of studies that show that if you do get nanoparticles from sunscreen in a cut, they come along and they chomp it up like Pac-Man, and within 24 hours, it's all eaten and processed, and you're fine. Nobody died from sunscreen in their scab, okay? People die all the time from being in the sun too long. I'm not afraid of sunscreen. I use it all the time. I think we should all know that it's in there, though, because then you can make a decision, right? You don't have to do it. Buy the zinc stick, the big, thick white one, if you don't want nanoparticles on your face. That's cool. They sell washing machines now, whole washing machines. Samsung has this whole line of washing machines that puts nanosilver in your wash every time. Because nanosilver is antibacterial, and bacteria is what makes you stink, just so you know. Okay, so that smell you have in your clothing, that's bacteria, and it likes to eat things in your sweat, and it's kind of gross. And if you don't kill them when you wash them, your clothes smell. So now Samsung have a washing machine that literally puts nanoparticles of silver in every wash. So your clothes are actually bacteria-free at the end of it. Is this a good idea or not? I'm not going to discuss my issues about putting nanoparticles in wastewater and stuff. That's a whole side note. But I think we should all know it does that, and then you can make a decision on whether or not you want that to happen. I went to Pack and Save. I never go to Pack and Save. I went to Pack and Save, and they had nanosilver in a spray for $4.99. That's a deal. I bought 3. I don't know what to do with it, but I thought it was cool that you can buy it in the Pack and Save. Antibacterial, so you can put it onto your kitchen counters and it kills all the bacteria on there. We do know that nanosilver is really antibacterial and that can be a good thing. And I found in my, I cycle a lot, and I found in my bike helmet, I turned it over the other day, and the little foam patches say nanoparticles. I was like, huh, it's because my head gets sweaty, right? And you don't want your helmet to stink, because who washes the helmet? Nobody. So they put nanoparticles in my helmet so that it kills the bacteria and it doesn't smell. So they're actually in a lot of places that I wasn't expecting. If you're a window cleaner, please, I would suggest you retrain. Because pretty much any high-rise building now has nanotechnology on its glass to make themselves clean. It's titanium dioxide. It's a thin layer. It's so thin you can't see it. So you can still happily look out your window and not know that there's a thin coating on there. But what it does is it actually oxidizes the dirt in a certain way that when it rains, it just washes straight off. So yeah, I would retrain if you're a high-rise window washer, but everybody else should be good. So we're not going to see those sort of industries anymore because nanotech is coming in. And Wilson have now put nanotech in their tennis balls. This is ridiculous. It means that they don't lose the gas so much. They stay bouncy for longer. There literally is nanotech everywhere. So we came here today to talk about gadgets and devices and things. And so where is it in our gadgets? Where is it now? What's coming? What's the future? So first of all, let's talk about making things invisible. So there's a bunch of nanotech coatings. If you have a phone or a device, it's got nanotech on it, okay? I've got my case on, but if you looked at it, we can do it with my Surface. Okay, I talked to you yesterday, if you were at my talk yesterday, about how we have literally one molecule layer thick of polytetrafluoroethylene on there. You can't see it, but it's there. And it does a lot of things to the surface of your device. The backing has a coating. Most of your devices have a nanocoating on both sides. One for the touchscreen function, to make it easy, to make it scratch-proof, da-da-da-da. And one on the back to make it scratch-resistant for the metal. My first real commercial job was with Apple. And the first Apple, the iPhone 3, the first real big smartphone that became popular, I worked on a coating for that that would make it scratch-resistant. Because it was the first time people had a phone that was scratching the glass off. Because we never really had glass on phones, right? We used to play Snake on Nokias. Remember that? That was like the high-tech thing. And then you're like, oh, we have all this glass on here. And people put phones in their pockets. People put other stuff in their pockets too, like keys and coins and other scratchy stuff. And so when I was working for Apple, we were developing a thin film that was see-through, so you just thought it was glass, that was scratch-resistant. And I used to do this thing all the time, where I'd take a key and I'd scratch it up and down the top of the iPhone, and people thought it was magic. And I was like, yes, nanotech, same thing. That was a start, and now pretty much any smartphone that you have has this nanotech coating on the top. You can't see it, but it's what makes it scratch-resistant. Imagine carrying a piece of glass in your pocket, right? It would behave very differently with a bunch of keys in there. Your phone is protected through nanotech. Now, I'm doing something that is a little bit weirder than that, okay? So nanotech is because you can't see it because your eye can't resolve it. But what about making things invisible? What about if you had a device that you couldn't see? What about if you had a modem or a router that looked ugly in your house and you just wanted it to be invisible? That would be cool, hey? I reckon we can do it. So this is a metamaterial. And a metamaterial is a material that cannot be made naturally. The advantage of being a nanotechnologist is that I can pick up atoms and force them into places that they don't want to go. Nature has this rule about atoms, and I'm like, I've read your rule book, I'm going to break it. And I put them into positions that they hate to be in, because I can do that, because I have machines. Metamaterials have huge potential for making things invisible. So the problem with doing an invisibility test is I forgot. I can't see where I put my thing. Okay, so... Darn it. Should have thought that one through. So the reason... I think it's there. The reason why... You can see me and I can see you, right? It's because light is bouncing off us. And we absorb some of it, and some of it bounces off our skin, and it reflects to our eyes, and my eyes can pick up certain colors and certain wavelengths of light. And I can see you all have shapes, and I can see you all have colors, and I can see you all have texture, right? That's because of the way that light bounces off stuff, and I can see it through my eyes. To make things invisible, I can either make it so small I can't see it, or I can play with light. And I can play with it a way that my eye sees light. And so what we can do is we can do this thing which is messing around with the refractive index of materials. Refractive index is how fast light passes through stuff, right? Light doesn't pass very quickly through you. Light passes quite quickly through air. And light passes a little bit slower through water. So if I put a spoon in this glass of water, for example, you've done this at home, right? Where you're like the spoon bends or the pen bends or you've put your leg in the swimming pool and it's like put on 10 kilos and you pull it out and you're back to normal again. So when you do that, it does that because light is bending off it because it's going through at a different speed. Makes sense. Now, who has a glass of water? You had a cup, right? Can I get you to stand up? And Jason, did you have... So you have a cup of water. Does it? Can you tell me if you have a cup or a glass of water? Yes? Yes, happy. You guys can see I have some water here. Now, yeah, with the bigger bowl, can you just put your hand in that glass or cup of water for me? Show everybody that face. That is not a good face. Do it again. Why did you pull that face? Oh, so it's not just a cup of water. How does it feel? Solid, liquid, squishy?
Jellyfishy.
Do it again. If you put your fingers in your one, what do you feel? Is yours empty? Ah. Do you think I've got one in here? Can you see it? Can you see yours?
I can't see
anything through that glass. It's invisible. See that? That's invisibility. Solid object hidden. Can you scoop out your object? Ah, not invisible. Why is it not invisible? Because light is passing through at a different speed. What we've done is made materials to have the same refractive index as a medium. In this case, water. Meaning you can't see it in water, but you can in light, in air. What we can also do is have things have a refractive index that you can't see in air, but you could in water. So I'm going to pass these around. I'm probably going to make a mess. Sorry, people. But have a feel. Have a look. Don't pour water on other people. Let me scoop it out with the balloon. With this. So you should see. And feel free to hold, feel, pass it on. And I'll put it in the water. That you can make things invisible. Not making it up. True story. So people then, grown-ups, not just kids, didn't see anything in the cup, okay? It's not an illusion, it's science. So now we can start to talk about invisibility and making things invisible. So that's one way, matching the refractive index. The second way is with metamaterials. Metamaterials are how we can actually get light to go in a different direction. So light usually bounces off your reflex, but we can get light to go around stuff. And if light goes around stuff, you can't see it. And now you've got cloaking devices. Good, evil, good, evil. Good, right? Must use science for good. Evil pays way more, but must keep using it for good. And so now we're talking about cloaking devices. So you can make things invisible to certain wavelengths, not just visible light, but IR and radar and all sorts of other cool things. Well, not so cool. So actually, would you want a phone that wasn't able to be picked up by other devices? Maybe. We could make your stuff invisible. Nanofluids. I freaking love these. I can't get enough of them. So I've brought some. Who wants to be my... Can I get one of you guys to stand up here? Hi, what's your name?
Sean.
Sean, nice to meet you. What's that? I'll pass this around. Don't feel like you're missing it.
Oily stuff.
Like oily stuff? Don't lick it.
I'll smell it.
What's wrong with you? You cannot come to my lab.
I don't want to taste it.
Magnet. What's happened to it?
It must have some metallic substance that holds the magnet.
Feel free to share that with people. This is a nanofluid. It's a ferrofluid. Ferro meaning it has iron in it. Basically, and you can go to Murawai and you can just collect some sand, just so you know, this doesn't have to be expensive. And you can put it with some olive oil and you can grind it in your coffee grinder and you get this too. So ferrofluids are really interesting. If you get the particles small enough, just iron particles, they behave independently in fluid, right? If it's too heavy, it sinks to the bottom. But if you make them nanometer in size, and you can do that with an old coffee grinder, they free float in the oil. And they react to a magnet, and you will enjoy it. When this comes around, you will like this game. And you can make all sorts of shapes, because what you're doing is you're actually seeing the magnetic field physically. So the magnet, if you do it either way, it has a different magnetic field. So it makes different shapes, just like this spiky stuff. The advantage of that is many of our devices have magnets in them. And when the ferrofluid gets hot, it loses its magnetic ability. And now you have a cooling device. Because it attracts to a magnet inside your device. When it gets there, it heats up, loses its magnetic ability, then drifts away. And now you've got a self-circulating nanoferrofluid cooling system. I talked yesterday about having water in copper. Nanofluids, I think, is going to be the next sort of cooling technology that we have, because we've got a bunch of magnets in all of our devices, and we have huge issues in how we're going to cool them. Coatings, we've talked a lot about coatings, but pretty much every device you have is coated with something. It's usually coated with some sort of polymer layer, or polymer being a plastic. And we can put heats on there, because your eye really can't resolve anything up to about maybe 5 microns. So we can put coating after coating after coating. We can make these coatings conductive. We can make them smart. We can make them protective. We can do whatever you want on there, and you still can't see them. So a lot of your screens have layers and layers of technical coatings on, and you still think it looks like glass. This is the biggest question I get. Why are you people not making my phone waterproof? Right? Because I've killed a lot of phones. A lot. By killed, I mean drowned. Drowned a lot of phones. In fact, one very recently. Again, even in a life-proof case. So, more things to pass around. What you have in here is some sand. This is special sand, because I have the ability to make shit waterproof. Because I develop stuff which is super hydrophobic. So when you dig out that sand, does that behave like normal sand? If you pick it out with a spoon, you should see that it's totally dry.
Instantly dry,
even though it's wet. You'll see what I mean. How do we do this? We do it by making it super hydrophobic. How do we make things super hydrophobic? We understand how water behaves with surfaces, and then we confuse it. We can do that through nanotechnology. Now, don't think I'm a genius for doing this. I'd love to take that as the compliment, but I just copied nature, because nature's figured this out already. If you have a lotus leaf or a broccoli leaf, it's way easier. I grew broccoli at home just for this experiment. Go home, put a drop of water on a broccoli leaf or a kale leaf, and you'll see it beads off. And it does that because it has tiny little nanoparticles on the surface. Natural ones, but I can make false ones. And what they do is control how the water sits on the surface. And if water can't sit on the surface, it would much rather ball up and roll away. So yeah, we can make your phone waterproof, it's not a problem, but why would we want to? Because you keep drowning them and people keep buying them. Marketing. Science for good. So I have actually waterproofed quite a lot of phones in my life using this sort of coating. The biggest problem we have, and the reason why it's not mainstream, is abrasion. Because you are always plugging things in and pulling them out and putting headphones in and pulling them out and charging things and pulling them out, and then you've got keys in your pockets. It's not that we can't make them waterproof. It's that we can't make them waterproof for long enough that we can guarantee that it'll stay waterproof, right? And that's the biggest marketing issue. I can make it waterproof for you right now. Give it to me and I'll spray it and it's not an issue. But I don't know what you're going to do with your phone. And because it's an invisible coating, you don't know when you've worn it off. Until one day, you drop it down the toilet, and you're like, died. So we can actually do this. And if you're in Japan, you've never heard of a phone not being waterproof. Because Japanese women talk in the shower on their phone. There's a whole TV commercial series, because it's the common, yeah, we all talk in the shower, blah, blah, blah. Who does that? Japan does that. Most phones in Japan are actually waterproof. Costs a lot more to do. It's not an easy process, but it's totally possible. But from a marketing point of view, it's probably not a good idea, because then you're not going to buy a new phone. And if you look at the statistics on how many people drown their phone, it's a lot, actually. It's a lot of replacement phones from toilet drops. So we can do it, and we can coat it, and we just put that coating that's on there, and you'll see that it's totally dry. It's not very abrasion resistant, and the problem is it's not conductive either. So there are a lot of connections you put in that need conductivity, and so we've got some issues with that, but we're working on it. Yes, you can put the hardening coating on top. The problem is when you do that, the hardening coating coats flat. So you need those nanoparticles to be sticking out for the wetting angle. So you can, but then you lose the wetting. So we have tried a double coat, and the hardening coating doesn't have the same nanoparticle shape when it covers it. So that's why we can't do that. And then I've been goofing around a lot, right? Because I figured that I dropped my phone enough that there's a reason for that. And there's a reason for that called friction, right? If I hold something and I let go, friction means that it slides off my hand. So I was like, well, what doesn't slide? Geckos don't slide off anything. I know this because I've tested it. The zoo stopped me coming, actually. Because it's the only place I can find geckos in Auckland. And they're like, please put them down. I'm like, look, will it stick on this? And I come in with a new surface, right? I literally came to the zoo with a tile. I'm like, darn it. Maybe it's a dud. Let's get a different gecko. Right, so geckos have got this figured out. No, seriously, I'm banned from the zoo. So geckos have... I thought it was science so good. They said it was like lizard abuse or something. I don't know. But basically, what I did find in this, and it was all right, I found the ending, is that geckos don't stick to Teflon. True story. But when you walk into the zoo with a frying pan, people ask a question. So why do geckos stick to everything apart from Teflon? They do it because if you look at their feet, they've got these tiny nano hairs on their feet. And you may have seen that I'm a little bit 3D printing obsessed. And so what I can do is I can print nano hairs. I'm going to pass these around, but I will need them back. These are little 3D printed nano hairs. And I've mimicked the gecko because I figured it sticks to everything. And once you start putting nano hairs on stuff, it sticks. That means that now you could have a smart device that you could just stick to the wall. But it's reversible, right? Because I mean, geckos don't stick for life. They walk, they move, you can pull them off, right? So reversible adhesion means that you don't need tape anymore. And if you don't need tape, I really need these back because this is real science that I'm doing now. So please don't steal these. But have a look, have a feel. They don't feel sticky. The thing about reversible adhesion is it's not about feeling sticky. If you feel the pads of a gecko, the zoo stopped you allowed to do this. But if you go to another zoo and you touch their feet, it's not sticky. It's just because there are so many hairs, you have hundreds of thousands of millions of van der Waals forces. It's one bond, but when you have one bond times a million, that's really strong. So I figured that we could just print this stuff, and now you could literally stick whatever device you want onto anything you want. That would be pretty cool, right? How many times have you been watching a movie and like it slid off your lap and you're like trying to eat your tea and, right? Just stick it to an object. And then when you're done, walk away and stick it somewhere else. So I actually think a lot of this tech is going to be pretty cool for sticking our devices in places we never thought that we could stick them to without damaging them. How resilient are they? So these are, I've printed a whole bunch. It sort of depends what you print them out of. There's a company now called Gekskin who have turned it into a fabric. And so you can just put that fabric on anything you want. And they've created walls of this fabric, which is pretty fun. I want to go there in Boston. I want to go and stick myself. I just want to see if that works. So this is one way, mimicking the nano hairs. It's probably not how we do it on a commercial scale, but it's understanding the science behind it so then we can create a product that's easy to print out. And 3D printing isn't a commercial thing, right? It's good for me in the lab because I can change stuff, but we need a way that we can do it commercially. Doesn't matter if it's dirty. Makes no difference if it's dirty or not. We've made them really dirty. And gecko feet are filthy. Geckos aren't like, ooh, stood down, got to lick my feet, right? Geckos live outside. They're filthy. But it seems it doesn't stop them sticking. So this is what they look like close up. I've printed a whole bunch of cool stuff. What do I want? We have a little strip. So geck skin have a little strip like that that can hold 100 kilos. I know. Yes, I want to make a Spider-Man suit. Don't steal my thunder. I want to be front page news because of that. You know what I'm working on. Have you been to my lab? If you're interested in powering your devices, right, how many of you wish that you had more power from your device? How many of you are like, darn it, run out of battery. Does anybody have a charger? I'm tweeting. I'm live tweeting. Oh, I can't tweet anymore because I've got, right? How are we going to power devices? There's new wireless technology from Power by Proxy, which is great if you have that tech. But actually, how many of you have a temporary tattoo right now? How many of you would like to power your device with your temporary tattoo? How cool is that? So I'm not going to go into depth. If you want to find it, I've just done a radio series with Mark Sainsbury. Just Google Radio Live Michelle sweating or something. But yeah, no, seriously, that'll come up. And basically, they've taken temporary tattoos. They've printed them with nanotechnology that converts the enzymes in your sweat to power. So now you can wear a temporary tattoo. It doesn't have to be. It could be a sweatband, but I think these are cool. So those of you who have got them, you've got pirate tattoos. Take home. Something thin that is transferable, because we can print all sorts of electronics onto temporary tattoos now. We can do that to monitor your health. We can tell you if you're breathing or if you're not. Hopefully you are. But we can also use it to use your byproduct. We can use the enzymes in your sweat that you are sweating. I mean, we could make a whole set of ball sack pants that you could power a whole bunch of stuff from. Right? This is my next... Again, don't steal my thunder. This is my idea. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take over the world through ball sack pants. Whatever your sweatiest part is, we could power your device with that. Where do you plug it in? Yeah. So there's also technology where we're actually using glucose. So I did a radio interview last week about glucose in your blood to power devices. We have nano yarn. We can weave it into a fabric, and we can implant it. And it just creates constant power. Now, that's probably not good for your device on the outside, but what if you have a device on the inside? What if you have a sensor, a pacemaker, something that needs a battery? Now you can power it with the power of your body. I think we're really going to see biopower and biobatteries in the next couple of years. I know I'm running out of time. Okay. Nano for your future. Does anybody have any questions on nano for tech right now? Gadgets, gizmos, yell at me.
How do you get sunscreen
on your car's print? Why are you sunscreening your car? Yeah, I don't trust you. You lick stuff and...
Nano stuff goes through the paintwork and forever it oxidizes when you
want it. Oh, really? So tweet me. Yes, I can probably fix that for you, actually. But I reckon I could charge you for it, so tweet me and I'll turn that into money. anybody else got questions about future gadgets and... spray on solar panels. Oh, yeah. Okay, we could talk about that. So solar panels right now are just the worst, right? They're old technology. They're technology that's 15 years old. They use rare earth elements. It takes more energy to make a solar panel than you actually get from your solar panel. And they're a pain, right? They're glass. They break. They've got this structure, this triple-edged structure that separates on heat. I'm sorry. I only put my solar panel somewhere hot, right? Because it's in the sun. We have a huge delamination problem right now with solar panels in the current technology. We're totally changing that. So there's a whole group working on biomimetics, photosynthesis, because trees do this every day. They convert light from the sun to energy. Why don't we just copy that? So there's a whole bunch of research doing that. And there's a whole bunch of research doing flexible spray-on solar panels. You can put gold and conductive nanoparticles into paint, and the solar paint now, and you can just paint your house. But that's going to be the next step. I don't have solar panels for that reason, because I actually think the technology is going to be very outdated very soon. So conductive paints, conductive technology, flexible OLEDs, all of that, they're transparent. You can put them on top of glass now. Watch this space. 5 years from now, I think we'll all be running on solar, and it's going to be very different than solar panels. Yeah, it's totally changing. Problem is, the marketplace is selling a bunch of old stuff, and everybody's buying it because it's all we have. And I think that that's going to change really soon, especially because of governments giving you carbon offset stuff and other things like that, and because people are being more sustainable. Yeah. Any other questions on gadgets? Yeah.
Is nano small enough?
No, and let's go pico. I could do another talk on femto. How small do you want to go? No, we can go smaller. I talk about nanotech because it's something that we can do and is relatively easy. But we go way, way, way smaller. I have a femto laser, which is super fun. Having any sort of laser is cool, but having a femto laser is badass. I talk about this because this is the most common, but actually we do go much smaller, and we go bigger too. Micro is pretty fun. Question was down there?
Why can't they make carbon nanotubes longer than...
really small? Mostly it's just a time thing. We self-assemble carbon nanotubes, meaning that atoms... like building a house, right? It's like brick, 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 house. Atom, 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 atom. Nanotube. That takes forever. Most of it is just because we don't have any ways of mass manufacturing them. Nanotubes are still done in Petri dishes. And so somebody can come up with a way of self-assembling them quicker, then they're not going to get any bigger. Yeah? What about what?
Self-repairing
technology. Heaps of that around. Yeah, even at the macro scale. A lot of stuff I do is microcapsules, so you can encapsulate repairing materials into buildings, for example. Then when it cracks open that capsule and then it seals itself. I do that now with capsules that are about the width of your hair and put them into all sorts of technologies so they're self-healing. Heaps of self-healing technologies. The next move is, can we make it smart? Actually, if you Google self-healing glass, there's a great video from Stanford, I think, of a group who've just done that. And they smash the glass, and then it shows you it fixing itself. It's not robotic, it's not automated, but they've put microcapsules inside it so it can actually heal itself. There was a question there. Yeah. Yeah, so it's safe. I don't want to brand name it, but it's called Neverwear. It just entered a MITRE 10. That's the stuff that I've been working on for a while. It just came to New Zealand. It's safe. It's silica. You can eat it. I've had it. I've sprayed my tongue because I just wanted to see what something wet would be like if it was dry. It's not good. It tastes disgusting. Don't do it. I probably read your book. Hey, I'm listening. This. So, but no, it's totally safe. And so it's about knowing nanoparticles, which are safe, which are not. It's silica based. I don't think I'm supposed to tell you that, but it is. So I wouldn't worry about that. Go for it.
Nanotech and medical science.
I'll get there. One second. I'll get there. If we have enough time, I'll go through that. Your question.
So you're about to get the nanorobots.
Nanorobots. I'll talk about that. Oh, hey.
What's that
display? Kate, hold on to it. That's the last thing we're going to do. Everybody has a balloon. I did just my test to see who was going to like be patient with their balloon. However, I think I've got like 2 minutes left, so quickly I'm going to run through... I'm going to run through how to brain cell. So my whole goal, right, was about the book Brain, taking over people's brains. I do actually do that, but in a good way. Alzheimer's is all about neurons in your brain not communicating when you forget stuff. You have no memories. I want to know how that happens. And so I have a whole bunch of human brain cells in my lab. And I've been able to make them grow in a certain grid pattern because of cool nanotech. And basically, I want to know what happens when they go astray. Why do they stop talking? Do they stop talking or do they stop listening? What happens when they go astray? This dude always walks off, right? The guy on the left, he's like, I don't want to sit in your line. I don't want to be on your grid. I'm going to go somewhere here, right? What happens when brain cells go astray? That's how diseases happen. And so I'm working on stroke patients and Alzheimer's patients. How does their brain cell not communicate? Why are we losing that connection? I can do that because I have nanochips that can actually measure the current between different brain cells. Nanotech as a hunter is not always a bad thing. We're doing a whole bunch of cancer research right now. Take a gold nanoparticle, functionalize it with a coating so that it's only attracted to the antibody of a cancer cell. Put it in your body, runs around your body, is like, hey, I'm looking to pair up with a cancer cell, finds one, bonds directly to it. These gold particles heat up with light. It's light that passes through your skin. It doesn't do any damage to you. We shine you in a light box. It's pretty bright, right? Cover your eyes, and then every single one of these heats up. When it heats up, it kills the thing it's next to. It's targeted only to be next to a cancer cell. Direct targeting, I don't think we're going to have chemotherapy for much longer. I've seen a whole bunch of cool stuff happening here. Functionalized nanoparticles, Google the heck out of it. Tweet me later, I'll talk about it for days. Also means I can fluoresce them. So now I know where your cancer is, because the nanoparticle can fluoresce under certain lights. I can see it, I can tell you if it's metastasized, I can tell you where it is, and we can see if it's reducing in size. We just can't do that right now. So will they really take over the world? Yeah. Is that a bad thing? I don't think so. I think if it's used for evil, of course it is. But when you're talking about treatments for cancer and treatments for Alzheimer's and other things, sometimes it's okay that nanobots are taking over the world. And so there's a whole bunch of stuff in medicine. This isn't my medical talk. I have a whole medical talk that I could do too. So this isn't about that. This is about gadgets and gizmos. But yeah, there's a whole plethora of things. And as long as we keep an eye on it, and as long as we know where it is, and as long as we're socially responsible, and people call out the people who are using it for evil, I think it's okay that nanobots take over your brain. Back to your question, though, we don't have nanobots. They don't exist yet. A bot, I would define a bot as something that was automated, had arms, or manipulating tools. We don't have those. They're made up. They don't exist yet. The closest we've got recently is putting a magnetic tail on something, so now it can automate its motion. We don't have arms, we don't have gadgets, we don't have anything like that. Nanobots don't currently exist. We have inactive nanotechnologies with chemistry that forces them to have a reaction. But we're not yet at the nanobot stage. So those of you who have a balloon, hands up if you have a balloon. Hands up if you have a skewer. Okay, so nanotech is pretty cool. What happens if you skewer your balloon? Does anybody want to do that? Not everybody, but if you're quite happy popping a balloon, feel free to show us that reaction. There's one. Okay, not everybody. All right, stop, 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 stop. Because otherwise this is not going to work. So what we do with nanotech is we protect a lot of stuff. Why did that balloon break? That balloon burst because it had a crack in it, and that crack under pressure propagated hugely, and everything burst. I can't get this tape. So what do we do? With nanotech, we put a coating on something. And if you put a coating on something, you can stop that crack from growing. Can I get you to do one of those? And if you stop that crack from growing, then it doesn't explode. And so what that means is when you drop your phone on the floor, please, it is the undoable. Hey, you know what it is? It's not at the arrow. They give you an arrow, and the end of the tape isn't anywhere near the arrow. So what I'm going to do, those who have bloom, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to put that here.
Okay.
And what I want you to do in a second is stab the balloon right there. I'll show you your ones here. And if this worked, I shouldn't hear a bang. All I'm doing is applying a very thin protective coating which stops crack propagation. Put it straight in there. And this is basically nanotech. And this is how it works. Can somebody stab their balloon? Yes! Thank you. Science. Not science. And the reason why this happens, same skewer, same balloon, bad experimentalists, has a thin coating on the surface. Thank you for having this work. Has a thin coating on the surface, we now can put a skewer through a balloon and it's protected because a crack didn't grow. This is how you usually can drop your phones and it doesn't smash. And with that, that's nanotech. That's how we do it in gadgets. Nice to meet you all. Thank you very much.